everyone suddenly pauses because you expect something to happen now. So thank you for that. Let me welcome your excellencies, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this lecture. Tonight's event is the latest in a series of public lectures organized by the European Institute at the LSE. We have indeed been very fortunate in hosting a number of lectures from leading European personalities. Indeed, after the Easter break, we will be welcoming José Manuel Barroso, President of the European Commission, to give a public lecture here in this theatre on the eve of the British presidency of the European Union. In fact, the Commission President's lecture follows that of his predecessor, Romano Prodi, who gave a lecture for the European Institute a little while ago. But the European Institute has developed a strong focus on Turkey's relations with the European Union, and it is important that we do so. Turkey's application for full membership of the European Union represents a challenge, of course, to both Turkey and the European Union. Turkey is engaged in a domestic process of liberal reform. At the same time, the rest of Europe is challenged to recognize its own diversity and to accommodate a greater pluralism. These are fundamental questions of identity and purpose. The task is for Europe to develop a future in which Europe is more at ease with itself. The European Institute is engaging in this new agenda. We are indeed proposing to create a new chair, a full professorial position on contemporary Turkish studies in the European Institute, and we have made good progress with financing such a chair. We look forward to being able, therefore, to raise the profile in research, teaching, and public activity on contemporary Turkish studies within the European Institute. In parallel to this, we have developed a number of public lectures focusing on Turkey and its accession to the European Union. Last autumn, as a number of you will recall, we had the pleasure of hosting a public lecture by Mr. Ali Babacan, Minister of Economics in the Turkish government. Tonight's lecture allows us to look forward in the light of last December's European Council meeting, and our speaker is at the very core of Turkey's developing relationship with the European Union. Dr. Abdullah Gül has been Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of Foreign Affairs for the last 2 years. Before that, he served briefly as Prime Minister after the watershed elections of November 2002. Dr. Gül has wide experience. Professionally, he is an economist turned diplomat. He has a PhD in economics from Istanbul University. He has worked in the Islamic Development Bank, and he has taught economics as an academic. He has received a number of honors, not least those from the Council of Europe. As Foreign Minister, of course, Dr. Gül has been at the center of a range of pressing issues. He has steered Turkey's bid to enter the European Union. He has also managed Turkey's relations with Washington, not least in the context of the Iraq War. And he has continued the rapprochement with Greece and indeed has supported the Annan Plan for Cyprus. We are therefore keen to hear his thinking about Turkey's relations with the region, with the European Union, and internationally. The Minister has agreed that after his presentation, there will be plenty of time for questions and discussion, and we look forward to that dialogue. But first, can I please ask you to welcome a very warm LSE welcome for Dr. Abdullah Gül, Minister of Foreign Affairs in the Turkish government. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much indeed. Ladies and gentlemen, I am really honored to be with you today at this fine institution of higher learning. I would like to begin my statement of today by paying tribute to the wisdom and vision of the actors of British political, intellectual, business, and artistic life, especially on the issues related to Turkey and my people. It's not only because I spent some years of my academic life in this country. It is mainly because of the importance I attach to collective awareness the British society have of the merits of our relationship. I appreciate the level of consciousness at the United Kingdom of the value and meaning of Turkey's experience also for Europe and beyond. If I had to cite most recent indications of the British vision of Turkey, I would mention the active political support given by the British government to Turkey's integration process with Europe. The current exhibition, Turks, A Journey of a Thousand Years, organized by the Royal Academy of Arts. Increasing interest in the Turkish studies at the British academic institutions, including LSE. More than 500 British companies operating in Turkey, and the 37% increase in our trade volume last year only. These are the figures. Ladies and gentlemen, during my last visit to London, almost 1.5 years ago, I had delivered a speech at the Chatham House on the Turkish perspectives towards a new environment in the European Union and the Middle East. I'm sure at least some of you were present at that event. Before coming to London this time, I looked through my previous statement in this city. I checked if we had delivered what I had promised then. I checked if the perspective I had given proved to be correct. I must tell you happily that the answer is a yes. In that speech, I had spent longer time on three interrelated issues: Turkish-EU relations, regional problems with a special emphasis on Cyprus, reforms in the Muslim world. First, on the Turkish-EU relations, I had confidently announced that, I quote, "the determined and sustained Turkish reforms will culminate in the European Union's decision in December 2004 to open accession negotiations with Turkey," end of quote. Indeed, in the last 2 years, my government launched and implemented an ambitious reform campaign. Our reforms aimed not only to complying with the Copenhagen political criteria, they also responded to the aspirations and expectations of the Turkish people for high standards of democracy and rule of law. The European Council decision of 17 December 2004 confirmed the fulfillment of the Copenhagen criteria in Turkey, thus opening the way for accession negotiations. In the meantime, a lively debate took place all over Europe on Turkey's European vocation. I found any debate useful. In this case, too, every argument challenging Turkey's place in the EU was responded by visionaries and far-sighted politicians and intellectuals. The British contribution to this debate has been remarkable. I do not want to repeat the arguments favoring Turkey's integration with Europe or respond to those against it, but I do want to express my conviction that both Turkey and Europe have reasons to feel stronger now than before. Turkey and Europe have already begun generating synergy in economic or political areas. Turkish economy is now more confident in further opening itself to European investments and trade. Even in the last few months, diplomatic consultation and cooperation between the Turkey and the EU on the crucial developments in the Middle East, Iraq, or Caucasus have been further intensified. We shall now be able to work on much closer lines on vital issues, from the energy policies to environmental issues, from terrorism to illegal immigration and human trade. Turkey and the EU can now tackle the challenges like fundamentalism, xenophobia, anti-Semitism, anti-Muslim sentiments more efficiently through joint intellectual, political, and administrative efforts. Transatlantic links will also gain additional strength from Turkey's European dimension. NATO summit in Istanbul has been a symbol of such a perspective. I expect that this trend of fruitful cooperation of Turkey with the EU will further develop and will be consolidated parallel to the accession negotiations, which will begin on the 3rd of October this year. Ladies and gentlemen, the priority for my government is now preparing for accession negotiations. After the December summit, we began by arranging a series of briefings for the Council of Ministers on the characteristics and requirements of the negotiation process. On the other hand, I personally have been conducting intense consultations with the civil society and public institutions that will have a role in the process. Now we are at the stage of structural preparations. In the meantime, we are proceeding with the political reforms and their implementation through the Reform Implementation Group, which I chair. I consider democracy as a process of perfection. Therefore, our reform drive will continue as ambitious as before. We are fully aware that the accession negotiations will not be an easy and short process. Through the challenges and difficulties of this process, Turkey's patience and stamina will be tested. I am personally confident that Turkey will pass this test successfully. This is a challenge which will give Turkey an opportunity to revitalize her capacity and potential. I believe that the Turkish society is dynamic enough to respond to the requirements of the negotiation process. A remarkable anecdote from the EU summit of 17 December 2004 was the unusually crowded group of journalists from the Arab and other Muslim countries covering the summit. Their number exceeded the Europeans for the first time. Their focus was the summit decision on Turkey. The relief, joy, and pride felt in the Islamic countries after the positive vote by the EU for a Muslim country is of great historic meaning. This response proved the wisdom of the European politicians, who attached special importance also to the cultural, psychological dimension of Turkish integration. When, in my speech at the Chatham House, I focused on the need for reform in the Muslim world, the Greater Middle East project had not been launched yet. Since then, awareness and call for reform in the Middle East has increased. Interest in the Turkish experience of reforms has grown equally. In this respect, I would like to make a few remarks. First, the reforms in Turkey was championed by a political movement that is AK Party, to which I belong, with strong grassroots. Therefore, popular ownership and support of the reforms was secured. On the other hand, Turkish people, through extensive and democratic debate, realized that the reforms were good for itself and useful for European integration on an equal basis. Therefore, reforms were not considered as imposed from outside. Secondly, we moved on the premise that as a country with over 99% Muslim population, our tradition and spiritual values did not contradict the contemporary standards of human rights, gender equality, or rule of law. We were confident that they were all compatible with each other and could even be enriching each other. Thirdly, our political and economic reforms were implemented in the same spirit and complemented each other. I understand that Turkey's accession process to the EU will continue to attract attention beyond our borders. Therefore, both Turkey and the EU should act carefully during the negotiating process in fulfilling their mutual responsibilities. The negotiation process should help to keep the reforms on track while economic social stability is sustained. Ladies and gentlemen, another issue I had focused in my last speech 1.5 year ago in London was our search for a peaceful settlement of the Cyprus issue. I hope you will all admit that the sincerity of my government's dedication to a comprehensive and final settlement of this conflict proved to be genuine. Unfortunately, I cannot tell the same for some other parties related to this issue. The Turkish government and the Turkish Cypriots supported the UN plan for a settlement. We and the Turkish Cypriots took risks and accepted making sacrifices. We acted with a vision of contributing to peace, stability, security, and prosperity in the eastern flank of the European Union. We opted for compromise because we considered it as a part of European culture. We have proved that Turkey's one and only aim is Cyprus. In Cyprus is fully guaranteeing the legitimate rights and security of the Turkish Cypriots. Those who claim that Turkey has been after military or strategic interest in Cyprus have been disproved. I hope you will understand our feelings of deception, disappointment, and frustration. Turkish Cypriot people who have voted for peace and reunification of the island is still being punished through anachronistic embargoes and isolation. The other party, which rejected a solution, is yet to pay a price. Rejection of the United Nations plan on Cyprus was not a lost opportunity for the Cypriots only. Peaceful settlement of this issue would encourage peace parties everywhere from Palestine to Karabakh. UN would gain credibility, which it badly needs. European Union would not be in the unusual position of importing a chronic conflict treated by the UN. However, Turkey will continue to act in consistency with its positive position and push for a peaceful settlement of the Cyprus problem. Turkish Cypriot people have already demonstrated their strong desire for a solution. The other party of the conflict has clearly proved to have no intention for a negotiated settlement. Turkey as a power with responsibilities in the region is acting with a vision with regard to the Cyprus issue. Our vision is to create a basin of peace and prosperity in the middle, in the Eastern Mediterranean, including Greece, Turkey, and the island of Cyprus, thus forming a strong pillar of the EU in the future. Turkish-Greek relations and dialogue is now almost exemplary. Turkey and a reunified Cyprus would have every reason to be each other's best neighbors once a just and permanent settlement of the conflict is achieved. Turkey, as a candidate country at a very special geographic location, will constitute an asset in the implementation of the European Union's neighborhood policy. Peace and stability in Southern Caucasus is one of our common concerns. My government is exerting every effort to encourage the consolidation of democracy and settlement of disputes in this region. I strongly believe that in the Caucasus, poverty and conflict can be replaced by prosperity and cooperation. This can be achieved through a stronger political will of the countries of the region and coordinated encouragement by the international community. Turkey is joining of her effort with the EU will surely increase the efficiency of the neighborhood policy of the EU. My government's consultations and cooperation with other powers like USA or the Russian Federation on the developments in Eurasia have already proved useful for all. In the last few weeks in Ankara, I had extensive consultations with my colleagues from both Azerbaijan and Georgia on the possibilities of easing the problems at the South Caucasus. With my Armenian colleague, I met 6 times in the last 2 years. Last year in Istanbul, I arranged a tripartite meeting with my Armenian and Azerbaijani colleagues. We focused on the modalities of a settlement of the Karabakh dispute. I welcome and encourage the ongoing contacts between the two countries. Any progress towards a settlement which would end of occupation of the Azeri territories would also contribute to the normalization of the Turkish-Armenian relation. In the Balkans, although the situation is better than a decade ago, political stability and economic social order is far from fully achieved. Kosovo's final status negotiations will be held in a tense atmosphere. Bosnia-Herzegovina needs special attention because of her still fragile structure. Macedonia is very sensitive to the developments around her. Both EU and Turkey have special responsibilities and duties in this region. Our political and security cooperation continues to be fruitful here. One of the areas where the Turkish-European cooperation could be most useful is the Middle East peace process. Turkey is a country which has good and special relations with all the parties of the conflict. I have recently visited Israel and Palestine and had useful talks with both parties. I am happy to see that our suggestions to the parties have been perceived well and taken into consideration by them. Now, it is most important not to lose the momentum of the fragile peace process. After Israel's eventual withdrawal from Gaza, security and economic issues will require more international efforts. We have already offered our contribution and cooperation in this process to the parties and international actors as well. In Iraq and Afghanistan, part of the problem is solved. However, these two countries continue to generate problems ranging from terrorism to drugs in an increasing pace. These issues are very complicated and require our joint and careful response. Resumption of the transatlantic dialogue on these issues has been most useful. Turkey has taken over the command of ISAF for the second time in the last 3 years. The performance of the Turkish armed forces in Afghanistan and in other peace operations has once more proved it to be an able, modern, and democratic army. In Iraq, we welcome and actively support the new phase of the political transition process. Through our constant dialogue with all the parties in the political arena of Iraq, we encourage a healthy functioning of the political process. The new transition parliament and the government in Iraq will have historic responsibilities in preparing and carrying the country to full democracy. Iraqis should now leave aside religious, sectarian, or ethnic criteria and focus on finding political solutions to their country's problem. They should be aware that Iraqi's integrity is part of the delicate balances of the Middle East. Any disturbance of these balances would bring nothing but suffering to the people of the region and the world. Now, I thank you for your attention. Now, I can have your question, not only in these political issues, also if you wish, on the economy of Turkey. Well, thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much.
So we have the opportunity to ask questions, and I can see so many hands up. Can I take the gentleman here with the tie?
Thank you. William Horsley from BBC News. Foreign Minister, in your speech, which was very interesting indeed, you didn't mention the United States, and I want to ask you about the relationship, the strategic relationship between Turkey and the United States, which is long endured through NATO. And I wonder whether since the arrival of the AK government and the US actions towards Iraq, that relationship has been shaken to its foundations or not. I'd like to ask you to assess the beginning of Bush 2, the second Bush term, in terms of the US strategy. You indicated some support for the Greater Middle East project, but I wonder what has happened to US-Turkey relations under your government and how you see the future with Mr. Bush's ambitions towards Iraq, Iran, also Russia. Thank you.
Well,
we arranged a nice, easy question.
It can be another lecture here, in fact, okay? First of all, I want to tell you that the Turkish-US relation is very much traditional. It's not new. It's almost 60 years relationship. And during the difficult times, during the cold years, we together defended the Europe that time. So our relation is tested on the ground. Yes, Iraq caused problem. I have to admit this. It's not between Turkey and United States. It is within the NATO. It is in the Europe. It is in the countries. So people were divided. It was for the full cooperation with the United States at that time. We brought it to the parliament. In the parliament, full cooperation was rejected. Then United States respected that because it was democratic decision. This was not against United States. This was not against the relation. This was the decision of the parliament because Turkish people suffered a lot because of Iraq. That time, almost 95% of the Turkish people, they were against the war, you see. So in that atmosphere, the deputies reflected the feelings of the people. But later on, we continued to cooperate in Iraq. Now, when you look at the fields, ground, it's going well. First, let's look at Afghanistan. I just mentioned, we took over the command of ISAF alone. It's the second time. So more than 2,000 troops are there, okay. And they are very successful. Then, on the Greater Middle East projects, I just mentioned, before the project was launched, we talk about the democracy in the region. We talk about the transparency. We talk about the gender equality. We talk about the corruption in the region. And we in Turkey carried out so many reforms that these were called as a silent revolution in Turkey. Then in Iraq, Turkey became the main route for the humanitarian aid to Iraq. Every day, almost 3,000 trucks are carrying goods. Some of them are working for the coalition forces. We are very much constructive, and we are supporting the political process in Iraq before the election and after the election. In fact, President Bush visited Turkey before the election, during the campaign, in fact, okay? He visited Turkey. We had the NATO summit in Turkey. It was very much successful. So when you look at the relations, I see some criticism on the papers. But between the two administrations, I think everything is going well. And this will continue also well. Recently, new Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, after becoming the minister, he made his first visit out, and Turkey was one of them. So we had very good talk. We had good press conference. We declared everything openly, and I'm sure that we are special for them and they are special for us. And this will remain like that.
Thank you. The gentleman here, straight ahead.
Thank you. Konstantin Bohaya for Jane Sentinel. During your press conference earlier on this morning, you mentioned there was an action plan between Turkey and the United Kingdom for the European presidency. Could you tell us perhaps what this action plan is, please?
In fact, this action plan is between United Kingdom and Turkey, okay? It includes so many things, you see. Political issues, economic issues, then cooperation to fight with terrorism. So it's going well. But as you know, the UK is going to take over the presidency after Luxembourg. So our actual negotiation with EU will start during the UK's presidency. So we have to prepare ourselves. My visit, the main purpose of my visit is that, and we had very good talk with Jack Straw today. We checked everything. We agreed on certain things, and the preparation will continue.
Thank you. Should take one up here. Gentleman in the white. There's a microphone on its way to you, but slowly, I'm afraid.
Hi, Dr. Gül. Christos Dimas, I'm doing my PhD here at the LSE. Turkey will have to sign the customs agreement with the EU25. Does that mean that Turkey formally recognizes the Republic of Cyprus? And if no, why?
Well, first of all, we don't recognize Greek Cypriot. Why? It's very clear. Now, there are two different people on the island. I don't want to go to the deep of the problem, but we are here to solve the problem. Turkey prefers to find the final solution there in order to reunify the island. For that, Turkey and Turkish Cypriot people, they did everything. Now, I will ask you, okay, please check yourself. A year ago, what was the perception about Turkish people on the island or about the Cyprus problem? I am sure that most of you thought that Greek Cypriot people, they want to solve the problem. They want to reunify the island, but unfortunately Turks, they reject everything. They don't want solution. They create problem. And they refuse the UN plan. This was the perception. I'm sure that most of you believe this. Then what happened? The UN plan, I will come to that. Okay? Then what happened? The UN plan was put on the referendum on the both sides. One side, the Turkish side, they accepted the plan. They said, yes, we will compromise, although it's not meeting 100% our expectation, but the compromise is a part of European culture, so they compromised. The other side, they strongly rejected this. That's how the big opportunity was missed. Turkey, in fact, wanted to recognize if there was a solution. Since there is no solution, since there is no agreement, since there is no united island there, how can we recognize? There are two different communities over there. There are two different states over there. That's why we don't want to recognize. And we want to get rid of this problem also. Therefore, we push all the solutions. My government changed our traditional policies. My government is initiating all the peace efforts. Recently, we asked Kofi Annan again to initiate the peace. And remember, Kofi Annan, just a few weeks ago, asked the Greek Cypriot side, Mr. Papadopoulos, what do you want? What kind of changes do you want on the plan? Tell me. His response was very, very, very negative. Now, anyway, we will work for the final solution, but at the same time, there is a custom union since the Greek Cypriot side joined the EU, custom union should function. In fact, I don't know if you know, custom union is functioning since 1st of May 2004. According to the EU acquis, newcomers, when they join, automatically they start to fulfill all the EU acquis. Therefore, between Turkey and the Greek Cypriot side, all the goods are moving freely. There is no any problem. Now, the protocol we are going to sign this with the EU presidency very soon. We negotiated. We said, yes, we are ready to negotiate, to sign this. There is no any problem. But this will not mean that we will recognize. In fact, in 17 December, when the EU Council declared that the negotiation is going to start with Turkey, then the president of EU, that time, Mr. Balkenende, the Prime Minister of Netherlands, they also declared that Turkey is going to sign the protocol, but this will not mean the recognition.
Thank you. Thank you. The lady here. There's a microphone just behind you.
Foreign Minister, my name is Ayşe Gül. We share a surname. I'm from Açık Gazete. I was encouraged by what you said about democracy being a process of perfection. I share that view. And I don't doubt your personal sincerity in wishing to see reform in Turkey. However, my concern is that you may be let down by certain government institutions, primarily the bureaucrats and the police. I was very saddened by the events of International Women's Day, for instance. What I wanted to ask is, how will you ensure that the commitment at the top cascades to the various levels of government, government agencies, government offices? How can you eradicate, or how do you intend to eradicate corruption within ministries and government offices, or alternatively, police brutality?
Well, we passed so many laws. We changed it structurally. We changed the country. Of course, passing the laws, legislations, this is important, but their implementation is the most important. So we are so keen, we are well aware of the implementation. I am the chairman of the committee which monitors the implementation of the laws. Changing the habits is not easy, okay? Definitely, okay, it takes some time. If it is not conscious, then you need some time. But if we see conscious resistance, definitely we punish them. It's very clear. So there is a good progress if you compare today's Turkey with the previous years. There's a big change. 2 years ago, I remember, there were so many things that they were forbidden. Now, these are the part of our life. The police, if you compare their action with the previous years, also there's a big progress. Now, when you see some wrong things, these are individual. Definitely we will correct them. Definitely. And don't forget that in 2 years' time, really, there is a big changes in the country. So this will continue. There is no any way to go back. The reform process will continue in Turkey. Government is so determined.
Thank you. The gentleman in the middle at the front. I'm making it difficult for the people with the microphone. No, no, we won't hear you fully.
Hello. Hello, my name is Panos Papoulias. I'm at the government department at the LSE. I have two very short questions. The first question is this. All the members of the European Union have to ratify the European Constitution. If one member of the European Union doesn't ratify this constitution, then the results of this non-ratification will be serious for the European Union itself. To what extent do you think a possible non-ratification of the constitution by any one of the member states will affect Turkey's entrance to the European Union? That's the first question.
Can we leave that? There are lots and lots of people. Could you just accept the first question?
Well, there's a danger, of course. This danger is in some of the leading countries or founder of EU. If that happens, definitely there will be a crisis. I mean, that crisis, it's more important than Turkey, okay? Forget its effect on Turkey, okay? I mean, that we can ignore that, you can ignore that, okay? Suppose that in France, if the constitution is rejected, so there will be crisis there, or in another member countries. Its repercussion on Turkey will be very small.
Thank you. Here, please.
Hello, this is Ozan Şakar from the LSE Turkey Society. Well, my question is, how hopeful about the shortness of the negotiation talks until 2014? Is 2014, for example, for Turkey to become a full member a reasonable date? And what do you think about France, for example, taking taking the Turkish membership to a referendum? And on a personal note, who is going to be the chief negotiator with the EU? Will it be you or will it be Mr. Babacan?
You can speak confidentially amongst merely 400 friends.
We know that it will take longer because the similar countries, Spain, okay, it took 8 years, 9 years. So I think it will be around that, okay? But I believe that by that time, Turkey will be a different country. And referendum in some countries, like France, yes, but they did referendum for other countries, for UK, twice. After 10 years, when Turkey changed, when we upgrade all our standards, I think Turkey will be very much attractive country, okay, for the member countries. So I don't see any problem. For the chief negotiator, it became like pop stars, you see, everybody wants to know the name. Very soon we will announce that.
Thank you. Time for two short questions. The gentleman here.
Thank you. My name is Mr. Christodoulou from the Lobby for Cyprus. You mentioned that the Yanan plan, which Turkey supported, it's a plan that could have led to other regional issues being sorted, like you mentioned the Palestinian issue and Karabakh, and of course you haven't mentioned the Kurdish issue. If the Annan plan, and I will not go through the list of the issues in the Annan plan, obviously, the reason as to why the 76% of the Cypriot people democratically voted it out, because it was against the interest of the Cypriots. But I will ask you, wait, please.
A question.
I will ask you the question. If it's such a wonderful plan, would you support it for the solution of the Kurdish issue and possibly the Palestinian issue? And notwithstanding the fact that he gives that Turkey invaded Cyprus in 1974 and divided Cyprus. Thank you.
Well, I mean, do you want to prove that these two sides, Turks and Greeks, they cannot live together? I mean, I think you are proving this views. You are telling that, okay, these two people, they cannot live together. if still we have these feelings. So let them live separately, okay? Peacefully and separately. It's very clear, okay? Now, it's almost 30 years. They have their own administration over there. And I think the Greek Cypriot people, they don't want to disturb themselves by reunifying the island, you see. It's very clear, okay? Kofi Annan reports, in fact, indicated everything, you see. Now, who is right, who is wrong? This is an old story, okay? We can talk ours. You have your own views, we have our own views. Do we want to solve this problem or not? If you want to solve the problem, who will solve this? United Nations. And they wrote the plan. I understand very well that, okay, if you have the referendum, people, they have option to say yes and no. I don't criticize the people because of their no. But if the leadership leads the no, this is not acceptable. Because together with Greek Cypriot leaders, Turkish Cypriot leaders, we, Turks, and the Greeks, we were together in the Bürgenstock. 1 week in the hotel, we work all together under the chairmanship of Kofi Annan. Because we agreed that we will work to reach an agreement, to have one plan. And also we agreed that, okay, if we don't reach the agreement, we will leave the authority to Kofi Annan. He will fill the gap. So from the very beginning, we agreed. Then we work 1 week. We were not able to reach the consensus. Then we asked Kofi Annan to fill the gap. He filled the gap. Some in favor of us, and some in favor of the Greeks people. That's how the leaders, they put the plan on referendum. Now, the Turkish leaders and the Greek Cypriot leaders, they should have waited there, okay? And the people, Greek Cypriot people, definitely, it's their right, because there are two options, to say yes and no. They could have said no, but now remember, Mr. Papadopoulos, he did everything. He led the campaign. Even he cried on the TV. Yes, remember? And he called people to say no. And remember, the EU didn't want to bring the problem inside. And EU also campaigned, but the voice of the EU was also blocked over there. Now, that's why, okay, we are disappointed. Otherwise, definitely, of course. I mean, people in the referendum, you can say yes or no. It's up to the people.
One last question, if I may. There are about 100... For Women's Day, we'll have the woman here, please.
Nikki Marks, BBC Radio. I'd like to return to events in Istanbul last week, Foreign Minister. To what extent has Turkey's human rights image been tarnished by the police action against women demonstrators in Istanbul last week? And how do you view the situation of Turkish women ahead of Turkey's EU accession?
Well, first of all, unfortunately, that happened in Istanbul. Now, it can happen here also. What's important here? After that, if there is a proper investigation or not, and after the investigation, if we are going to punish those responsible officers or not. We have started the investigation the same day we announced, in fact. And investigation is going on. Very soon, I believe that in few days' time, we will identify those involved. I mean, they did these wrong things. Then they will be punished. We announced this. But this can happen in London, in Munich, or in Paris.
Thank you.
We are going to cover it or not, we are not covering that, okay? We said, the Prime Minister, myself, from the very beginning, we said that they are going to be punished.
Thank you. I know the Minister has a very tight schedule. I would like to do two last things, if I may. The first is to thank on your behalf Dr. Gull for his presentation, his willingness to answer such a range of questions. We'd like to record our thanks, and this would be an opportunity for the audience to show their thanks as well. Please.
Thank you very much.
The final thing I must do is, could you please remain seated in your chairs until the minister leaves? This is standard LSE policy for security reasons. So please, can you bear with us and remain seated whilst we depart the theatre? Thank you. This way, please.